And now your host, all the way from Chicago at the DNC, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, that would be me. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning from Chicago. It is 6:06 on this Tuesday morning, August 20th, 2024. 77 days until Election Day, and I'm sure it's a beautiful morning all across Wisconsin, whether you're listening on the Civic Media Radio Network, on the Civic Media app, watching us through social media, or on demand by podcast. Nice to have you here this week after the first day and night of the Democratic National Convention. Greg Bach is back at the home base in Waukesha and making sure that we're able to come to you and tell you all about things up here where I know everybody's had a good time. not a lot of us are awake yet, just us and the people making breakfast for the early risers, but Greg is there, and that's the thing that's important, because then we get to have a radio show. Mr. Bach, good morning.
Hi, Pat. How are you? So, little behind the scenes, I had mixed a brand new intro for you. And
saying live from Chicago.
Somehow, yeah. The voice was gone.
I hate when that happens.
Me too.
We all lose our voice from time to time. Anyhow, well, guess what? We get three more days after this to make it up. So
true.
You will know, in fact, that we are coming to you live from Chicago, where, like I said, folks stayed up late. Greg was not one of those folks. I don't believe you stayed up for President Biden's speech.
No. I was late. I was up late for me.
Yeah.
That was like 9:15, 9:30. I had to go to bed.
I had every intention of going to bed, but was also writing an article for our website on some of the undercard speeches. I'd watched some of the earlier speeches, write up a story, find some clips to play on the radio today. But of course, by the time we got that done, it was almost time for Joe Biden's speech. And in for a dime, in for a dollar. So stayed up, but yeah, they packed that a little too full last night. That went way late, and which would include the president's remarks. And look, he's definitely won the right to speak however he wants for as long as he wants. And he gave a pretty traditional campaign speech. A lot of it was probably what he would have given on Thursday night. Mm-hmm. In accepting the nomination, talking about things that he'd done and things that they still need to do. But instead sprinkled in there were things that he wasn't expecting to say a month ago in handing things over, talking about how he loves the job as president, but he loves his country more and wants to do the thing that is, right by the country. And that for him and for many Democrats includes, above all else, making sure Donald Trump doesn't get back in office. There were a lot of great remarks by women that we're going to highlight later on today. Former Secretary of State, former nominee Hillary Clinton received, again, like President Biden, a very boisterous ovation. There was a lot of gratitude in the hall for, what the two of them had done for Hillary Clinton. It included, running in 2016. This was supposed to be her valedictory, basically. This was supposed to be, the end of her second term, and where she would have been, handing things off to somebody else. That didn't work that way. But it still was a case that there were so many people in that hall last night, and so many people watching around the country, grateful for her service. And then there were women like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who delivered some very fired up remarks to the crowd about Donald Trump that we're going to play a little bit later on. Vice President Kamala Harris made a surprise appearance on stage at one point to welcome everybody to the opening of the convention. Obviously, she'll be giving her formal acceptance speech coming up on Thursday. There were even remarks by Wisconsin Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez as part of the undercard, and she talked about her role as a nurse and the continued importance of healthcare as an issue. Dr. Jill Biden spoke, the First Lady, and told some very heartfelt stories about President Joe Biden and his family life. So a lot to set up the convention, Then there will be some business as well, plenty of caucus meetings, more speeches, much more time in front of the media, making the case for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to be elected instead of Donald Trump and J.D. Vance. But first, there must be parties. And Greg, I am happy to report to you that common sense prevailed, and I did not try to go to the Wisconsin party at the House of Blues last night, which, given how late things went last night, it probably didn't get its start till close to midnight. So for anybody listening who's heading home from the House of Blues, I hope you had a good time, because that just sounds painful to me now. As a young man, I would have been all in. I'm like, okay, House of Blues, let's go. No, not now.
Yeah, I honestly, like, it's, I think that's one of the reasons why I'm glad I'm not going, because I would just be like, I'm going to show up for the times I need to be there. Then I'm going to go back to the hotel. I'm going to sleep and be by myself. This is too many people.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's just me here in this big echoey room in this big old Chicago hotel that I've got to talk about here for a bit. It was built 20 years before the Titanic was built, if that provides some context. And in some ways it does, because on the one hand, you've got a lot of things that are just kind of gilded. They look, you know, they have that old gold plated feel, lots of marble, lots of brass, you know, and it's very stately, as a lot of these old big city hotels are. But then you get upstairs and you get to, and again, the place is nice, but it's massive. And so you do see, you know, the peeling paint, and you do see where some of the tile has been chipped away. The heater is like an old school radiator almost.
Oh my gosh.
It's not quite a radiator, but it is old. and the buildings as they were constructed back then, there are these inner courtyards. So basically, instead of a block, it's almost like it's a square, and all the interior rooms all look out on each other. Mm-hmm. And then there are those old timey fire escapes that are running up and down the length of it. So I could open up my window right now on the 10th floor and be out on a fire escape that I don't trust one bit. So I will not be heading out on that fire escape. But it's interesting. It is, by the way, though, there's definitely the old and the new here. And let me tell you about the new for a second. Old hotel, new Wi-Fi, new computer. I am actually using the hotel's Wi-Fi because I've got one of these inner rooms, so I don't get a really good cell signal for my hotspot. Uh-huh. So I did a speed test. I think I've maybe been in one other hotel ever that had this same or better internet speed. So I'm like, okay, you win. I don't need this hotspot. Let's give this a go. So whoever thought to rewire it, good on them.
And I was going to be excited, because I'm like, in the building that old, you know, somewhere in, like, especially the kitchen, there's a dumbwaiter.
Oh, I saw. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You see something that probably was a dumbwaiter and is all boarded up. You know, you see, like some of the homes along the way, you see coal chutes. You know, mm-hmm. I love all that old stuff. Took the train down from Milwaukee, which, you know, I enjoyed very much. It's very simple, very easy. And like everybody says when they're on one of these trains, why don't we have more of this?
I was going to say mass transit. What an amazing thing.
I know it's amazing what you can do when you make investments in the things that move people. It's like you have less congestion on the roads and things like that. But as we passed by the Foxconn site, I saw that big old dome that looks like the Epcot Center.
Yeah.
What is that?
I mean, honestly, Pat, here's the thing, is my dumb lightweight conspiracy theory / science fiction brains, like, what research is being done in there? I'll tell you right now, they know things. And
I don't think they're that advanced to be able to do that. It just looked like a big waste of time. I made a quick little video of it and turned it into an emoji. It was an eye roll emoji, because that's the feeling I got when I was going by there. But then when I got here, there was a package waiting for me. Because you'll recall the past few days I've talked about how my work laptop has finally run its course and would actually continually stop with error messages saying you've got to update to the new operating system. Like, no, this Mac can't handle that. It cannot handle the new operating system. So you should just leave it be. It's working fine with the old system. But our company's IT vendor, you know, puts these locks on computers and goes, oh, you must update, you know, for security reasons. And they wouldn't lift the block. It was like, well, we'll just send you a new laptop. Okay, fine. Send me a new laptop, which arrived and actually got that set up in very short order. And Greg, you know, I know everybody knows what I'm talking about. That first, I don't know, maybe 6 months or so with a new computer.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have any better analogy than a hot knife through butter as far as how fast and how smooth it runs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it, you know what? Other computers would, too, if you would just make it a little easier to figure out what all the gunk is that has to be deleted. But they still, after all this time, have not come up with a way to easily, what I would call, de-gunk a computer. And so, yes, it gets slower. It's more prone to crashes and things like that. But when it's brand new and there's nothing between you and the interwebs, it's a beautiful thing.
I mean, they want you to not be able to de-gunk it, to be fair. They want you to have to take it into a place for years. And then one day they're like, yeah, we can't do anything about this. You might as well buy a new one.
Yes, exactly. So
do you want to upgrade your phone while you're at it?
So I have a lovely doorstop here.
Yeah, right.
But it did its part, and that's all fine. So yeah, we're coming from a very old hotel with very new Wi-Fi on a very new computer. Hopefully it all works out fine. And then from here, I will be heading to the Wisconsin delegation breakfast. And I have to say, in all honesty, I think I'm probably going to have better luck interviewing Wisconsin folks at the breakfast. I got a feeling a whole lot of the delegation said, oh gosh, look at the time. Oh gosh, I got to get to bed. And you know, they like their breakfast. So I think I'm going to actually see a pretty good turnout.
Excellent.
For that awesome. Later on. So then we will bring you interviews the rest of the week with more of the Wisconsin folks. But coming up later this hour, we will hear from Christina Laurie, as we always do on Tuesday. She has some of the uplifting stories from Up North News in our daily newsletter. Sign up for it at upnorthnewswi.com. But in this case, we talk about Chicago food. Pizza and other things, because she is a native of the Chicago area. So that's coming up after we unpack more of the news coming up next, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this beautiful Tuesday morning. When you're here, you're up north, even when I'm in Chicago, live from Chicago on the Civic Media Radio Network. If morning radio had an air band competition, Up North News Radio would be one of the big heavy hitters because of Greg Bach and his ability to play so many instruments at once. As we mark Robert Plant's birthday, that and much more in today's history lesson coming up. We are, what is Ron White, one of my favorite comedians, how's he look? But we are loaded. We have so much history today. This was supposed to be a quick week. A quick segment all week while we're in Chicago. And I'm like, Greg, there's like 35 birthdays today. Could you help me pare this down, please?
And four of them are the Eagles.
there's a lot of Eagles history out there. Let's be honest. Yeah, it's true.
I mean, they're an important band. They've done a lot. They've sold some records, Pat. They really, you know, they have. That little band made something themselves.
Can you imagine the history segment, you know, 20 and 40 years from now going, is Taylor Swift in history again? Yeah, she was a big deal. You know, she sold some records. And it really did. So anyway, that and more coming up in about 30 minutes or so. You know, when I'm watching things last night, and I'm watching with a lot of folks from Courier Newsroom, the parent company to Up North News. And so there are folks from our national newsroom. There are folks from, you know, Iowa, and we've got people from, you know, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Arizona, all over the country who came in. Kia Vakil, of course, came in from California. It was great to see all these folks that I only ever see through basically Zoom meetings, you know, or chats back and forth on Slack. So it was great to talk. We got the credentials thing figured out more or less. I'm really thankful not to have been one of the people who had floor credentials for last night, because there were, it's a process. There were growing pains, shall we say, in anything new like this, figuring out where the checkpoints were. And again, this is, you know, I think this happens in a lot of places, but the convention organizers last evening, you know, seemed to still be learning the system as they were going along. And thankfully, Kia and some of the other folks got in and were able to do some interviews and report back. But as we were all together and watching the proceedings on computer monitors and phone screens, I want to take it back to practically the very beginning. And the opening prayer that was offered up by a priest who, well, first off, I want to say, I think it's always a good thing when you're covering an event like this. And of course, we were watching the clean feed, so I don't know that any of the networks had this up. But when you're seeing folks, you know, pray together in the name of service or the common good, and I thought that that was a healthy thing. The minister talked about building up the common good and how building up the common good takes love, and that we have to have that sense of service to one another. And it reminded me of an article that I've bookmarked, and I still want to go back and read the whole thing, in the Atlantic Monthly by McKay Coppins, who talks about the most revealing moment of a Trump rally. And he did a close reading of the prayers delivered before Donald Trump gives his speech. And in many of those cases, you have people praying to God for deliverance, he writes. The nation is in crisis, one of them said in New Hampshire, racked with death and addiction, led by, quote, wicked men who rule with imperial disdain. With each passing day, the minister said, we slip farther and farther into George Orwell's tyrannical dystopia. But, McKay Coppins writes, because God is merciful, there's reason for hope. One man stood ready to redeem the country, Donald Trump, and he was about to come on stage. We know how he strove to lead us in honorable ways during his term as president. We know the hour is late. We know the time grows short for us to be saved and revived. And then Trump would soon appear to Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA. And that was just one example that he found of speech after speech after speech that found a way to use prayer in a divisive way. And to say that the men and women around you are wicked, and we are in need of deliverance. I am reminded that I frequently pass by some handmade signs on I-94. I don't recall where exactly they are. Somewhere south of Black River Falls, and it's two signs, and one says "God blessed America," and the next sign says "He sent us Trump." And there, you'll see others like that around the area. But just that alone, just listen to the prayers that are offered up. And already right there, you have two very distinct versions and visions of America. So I was uplifted, I have to say, with the one that was offered yesterday about how building up the common good takes love. Now, again, there were a lot of speeches last night. There were, I don't think it's in dispute. There were too many. There were members of Congress up there that, I mean, I know them, and I think they're nice people and everything, but I mean, it really filled up the program and kind of got in the way of speakers who did have some very important things to say to a group of Americans who know them better. Whether it was for some, it would be, Congresswoman AOC from New York. I wrote up an article that'll be posted on the website later about the heads of six labor unions. And they were all very specific in their praise for the Biden and Harris administration and what they've done for American workers in terms of job creation, in terms of building out the infrastructure, in terms of saving American workers' pensions, in terms of the care economy, that, you know, you have people from the SEIU union who are caring for people with home care and in nursing homes and in places like that. And every one of these labor leaders took great pains to point out that Donald Trump has been nothing but hostile to American workers and gives every indication that he would do so again. That how did Sean Fain from the United Auto Workers put it? That Donald Trump turns blue-collar sweat into stock buybacks. And stock buybacks, of course, are used to inflate the salaries and bonuses that go to CEOs. He referred to Trump as a scab and took off his jacket, revealing a T-shirt that said as much. But there was one glaring omission, and that was the Teamsters. The Teamsters president, Sean O'Brien, I believe his name is, spoke at the Republican convention, and he wanted his own speaking slot at the Democratic convention, but has thus far, you know, refused to endorse anybody for president. The Teamsters union has not endorsed anybody for president yet. And that's something that's not really sitting well with folks, not only in the Democratic Party, but frankly, in the Teamsters union itself, where you have, you know, the National Black Caucus of the Teamsters, who have endorsed Kamala Harris and who called out their leadership for somehow losing track of who is the person that stands with them, the working men and women of the country. All right, let's talk food next with Christina Lurie. That's up next. You're up north. All right, this is the part I have been looking forward to for a long time. I mean, I've been to Chicago, you know, maybe a handful of times, but I mean, never with like a local tour guide or an expert. And here's my expert. It's Christina Lurie, part of the Up North News team, puts together our newsletter. Christina, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, but okay, I feel like you're setting me up for failure.
You can't fail at this. I know no, nothing, you know.
You haven't met Chicagoans, then they have very definite opinions of everything. So
yes.
I wish we could all practice our Midwest nice here and know that these are just suggestions that I personally like and my family enjoys. And Pat, I know you. I've known you for more than 2 years now. So I feel like everything I'm going to recommend will be up your alley.
Yeah, but just keep in mind, the Midwestern nice only lasts, if you ever want to get rid of it, you would just put a Chicago person and a New York person in the room and go, whose pizza's better? Go. And then the Midwestern nice is right out the window, right? I mean, you got to defend what's yours.
You don't even have to go as far as New York. I saw that there's a little bit of controversy going on between J.B. Pritzker and Gretchen Whitmer over she tweeted, what's the best Detroit style pizza Chicago's got? And so that was just laying down the gauntlet there. Absolutely. But why don't we start with pizza?
All right, because
you've been to Chicago, I mean, obviously many times. I assume you've had deep dish before. Which kinds have you had?
Well, here's the funny thing is that I actually make what you would call a deep dish pizza in a cast iron skillet, just a recipe that I found online. And the reason I picked it and liked it is I have no idea if this chain is around anymore. There was a chain of deep dish pizza places called Eduardo's. And so that was kind of my introduction to deep dish pizza. You know, they advertise it as Chicago style, blah, blah, blah. I just know that I really liked it. But all of my quick visits to Chicago have been just kind of in the downtown area, maybe for a conference or something. And so I'm not aware of like, where would somebody like you go for the best pizza in Chicagoland?
So we'll start with deep dish because obviously that's what's like unique to Chicago, but really the kind that Chicagoans eat most of the time we eat what's called tavern style pizza, which is just thin crust, which is also great. But I love deep dish. I'm not going to wade into the controversy of whether or not it's a pizza. People have very strong opinions on it. Yeah. But if you want deep dish, my go-to is either Paisanos or Lou Malnati's. Lou Malnati's, I grew up in the Chicago suburbs and we had Lou Malnati's right by us. So we went there probably most frequently. So Paisanos was a bit of a treat when we went into the city. And that's actually Oprah's favorite deep dish. So you got, you got the O seal of approval on that one.
What is it about it that makes it your favorite? Is it the sauce, the cheese, the, you know, the way they bake it?
Two defining things here. I'm going to go with Lou Malnati's. Okay. It's extra garlicky in their sauce. So if you like garlic, that part is great. And then the layer of cheese, sometimes I found it, because of how deep dish is like compiled, the cheese is on the bottom, right? So sometimes it's not like boiling hot at some places. Lou Malnati's cheese is always super melty, and it's also that super thick layer of cheese. What I don't recommend, I don't want to, this place gets plenty of business, so I'm not going to hurt them by saying this.
No,
I wouldn't recommend going to Giordano's. That's always mentioned, and it's some people's favorites, but I feel like it's favorites among people who visit Chicago and don't live in Chicago.
All right. So have we taken care of everything on the pizza board, everything that I might want to try?
I want to throw out one more, and this is not traditional Chicago, and it doesn't fit into either deep dish or thin crust category, but it's called the Chicago Pizza and Oven Grinder. And it's this hole-in-the-wall place. They serve what I will call a pizza pot pie. It's served, it's a bowl. They put the ingredients in the bowl. Then they layer the dough on top of it, like covering it, like as if it's a pie.
Okay.
And they bake it in the oven that way. Then they bring it out to your table and flip it over in front of you. And all the toppings, the melted cheese, the cheese is still caramelized because it caramelized to the bottom of that bowl. So when they flip it over, it's still golden brown. It is absolutely delicious. It's honestly like one of the best foods I've ever had. But that gets into to the territory of like, is this pizza or is it not? But 110%, like sometime in your lifetime, if you're visiting Chicago, you have to go to the Chicago Pizza and Oven Grinder.
All right.
It's near Second City too. So if you ever want to catch a show there.
So you'll notice that I started with pizza as, you know, somebody who, when you think about Chicago, you think about the pizza debate and the types and everything. For you as somebody from the area, I mean, is pizza the first food that you end up talking about? Or when you talk about Chicago, do you start to dwell on some other kind of dish or restaurant?
When I think Chicago, I really think of two main places. So one is Freddy's. It's actually like right on the outskirts of Chicago in a small suburb called Cicero that just borders, but it's really not that far from the United Center. And they serve Italian ice, which is like, I think, one of the most underrated food / drink items you can get in Chicago. It's the most amazing Italian ice. They serve it. So like the sizes they offer, it's so funny because they look like just like small Dixie cups, but then they pile it like a mound, like cotton candy on top of it. You know, so the sizes are very deceiving. Super generous portions, the most fresh Italian ice you'll ever get. It's just this tiny hole in the wall place run by the same Italian family for generations and generations. This was my grandparents' favorite place when they grew up in the neighborhood. So we always just grew up going there, and I highly recommend. My go-to order would be the half watermelon, half lemon, and especially recommend this time of year. But they also have like all kinds of different flavors, and they also have really good gelato too. And they also sell pizza because they're Italian. Why not? The other place I do think of when that just like epitomizes Chicago for me is this place that actually is one of President Obama's favorite places too. He was introduced to Manny's Deli by David Axelrod, who went to the University of Chicago for college and then grew up going to that deli. But delis are, I feel like a lot of times people equate them with New York, but I personally equate them with Chicago. And Manny's is just the absolute best. They're best known. Like you just, if you go there, you have to get the corned beef sandwich. You'll never had a corned beef sandwich like this. I don't like corned beef. That's from the grocery store. It doesn't taste like that at all. I've never had a food like this. The meat literally melts in your mouth. It's shaved paper thin. And then also just to talk about generous portions. One sandwich is absolutely enough for three people, if not more. Like three very hungry eaters. I have a lot of football players in my family. And, you know, that's the portions we use. So it's just absolutely amazing. It also makes great leftovers. So you know that you personally can get three meals out of it for, you know, your one $18 sandwich. Yes, it's a hefty price tag, but it's three $6 sandwiches. And then also at Manny's, they have just like, since it's a deli, they have incredible sides, like anything you want. And I've never had a bad experience there. And if you go, they also have like a cool wall of old pictures. You could see all the politicians that have eaten there. Obama is far from the only one. It's kind of like a rite of passage. If you're campaigning in Chicago, you have to eat there at some point.
Oh, I suppose. All right. Food notwithstanding, you're giving somebody, somebody's coming to town. They've never been to the area before. So set the food aside. They get in the car with you. Where are you going to take them this time of year? We'll say for the record, where are you taking them? If you just have the day to show them one or two or maybe three things.
So the biggest mistake would be getting in a car. I think we're going to go by foot. Okay. I think we're going to go by foot because it's just the most efficient way. If you've ever like driven through downtown Chicago, it's super irritating. And I feel like that's the easiest way to get people to hate the city, to make them sit in traffic. Obviously, you're going to be at the United Center, so you're going to have to take a car there. I would recommend driving there. But if we're in downtown proper, we're going by foot. And I think the absolute best thing to do is first, the absolute thing that I don't think is necessary to do that's always like at the top of people's list is to see Millennium Park and the bean, the cloud gate thing.
Yeah.
I just think it's way overrated. I honestly don't understand the appeal of it. It's nice to look at once, I guess, but good luck taking a selfie without a million other people in your selfie. And it just, I think that's overrated. So,
hey fam, I'm practicing gratitude. Look at this place I just discovered. Yeah. You know what? In Minneapolis, it's the same with that, the spoon with the cherry on front of the Walker Arts Center. It's like, okay, all right, it's there. That's fine. So where are we going?
So that's how you know, like, that's where the tourists go. Okay. Instead, I would just head right out down Michigan Avenue and walk all the way until it like dead ends at the lake. And that's Oak Street Beach.
Okay.
It's absolutely amazing. It is like kind of touristy too. A lot of people know about it now, but locals love it as well. It's not, you know, it's not overhyped. Mm-hmm. And once you're down there, I mean, just walking down Michigan Avenue that way, you first pass, literally name a store, you pass it. And, you know, they have the biggest Nike that you've ever seen. Like everything is just huge, super sized. You also go by the John Hancock Building, which I think provides better views than the Sears Tower because you can get pictures of the Sears Tower from the top of the John Hancock.
Now, it's funny that you just said that. I'm going to jump in to say that there was an article that I read saying, you know, the biggest mistakes tourists can make. And one of them is don't correct anyone when they refer to the Willis Tower as Sears Tower. It's been Sears Tower for people who live here. It's always going to be the Sears Tower.
And is that universally recognized? Like you guys still know it as Sears Tower.
Everybody does. Yes. Now look how you're still grudgingly kicking and screaming about Miller Park versus American Family Field. But with Willis Tower, whoever Willis is, they never had a chance. They never had a chance.
Yeah, I still call Sox Park Comiskey, so I'm very behind here. But I do, we could just skip it all together and just go up the Hancock and then you have no naming problem there either.
Yeah.
They also have a really cool attraction there that is, again, another, you know, main tourist draw, but it lives up to the hype where if you're not afraid of heights, you can just pay a couple extra bucks and you can like, it's this glass that tilts down when you're in it.
No, thank you. It's
really fun. I would recommend it. And I'm weird. I don't like balconies. Like I don't like the open, you know, being high up in the open, but I like if there's glass, I'm cool with however many feet up in the air that is. Also, just in terms of history, when you're walking down Michigan Avenue, you pass the old water tower, which is the only thing that survived the Chicago fire. So that's super cool to see. You also pass like this giant Hershey factory, and you can get like a little tour inside, and they have cool like Hershey bars that from around the world. There's also the world's largest, I don't know, I feel like those are always being surpassed, but it was the world's largest McDonald's, and it's McDonald's headquarters. So they have a menu, like something on the menu there from every single country. And for a lot of those countries, it's the only location outside of that country that you can get these items. So they have like a million different types of McFlurries that you never get in America and all kinds of different things. It's about the only time I'll recommend eating at McDonald's to someone.
Because it's something just very different. Yes. Right. Yep. And in between the aquarium, the museums, if you had to pick just one of those, what's your favorite?
My top hands down is the Museum of Science and Industry. Okay. It's a little bit farther. It's a little bit farther south than the other ones. You know, the Field Museum is very walkable. The Art Museum is right there too. But nothing beats the Museum of Science and Industry. It's super cool. I think for people like us too, you know, we have a lot of questions naturally as journalists. That museum has a lot of answers. You know, it like shows you how different things are made. They also seem to have like the coolest traveling exhibits, I think. But you really can't go wrong with any museum.
No, you can't. And like they're, we've taken our daughters to those when they were younger, and just magnificent, fun places to go. It's like you have to do at least the one family vacation and show folks what Chicago is all about. This was a nice diversion from some of the usual things that we talk about in honor of the Democratic Convention being in Chicago. And by the way, folks, when you're there, don't forget about the zoo with the tamest bears ever. That of course would be Soldier Field. Christina Lori, thank you so much. Good to see you. Thank you for
leaving. I had to get in one bear's jab, didn't you?
Just had to do the one. Yep. Have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
We'll be back in a bit. You're up north. On this day in 1970, Creedence Clearwater Revival's album, Cosmos Factory, hit number one. There were a few hits on this thing, Greg.
Just a tad.
Just a tad, a traveling band here. Who'll Stop the Rain, Looking Out My Back Door, Up Around the Bend, Rumble Through the Jungle, and, of course, their cover of I Heard It Through the Grapevine. So, yeah, I could see how it got to be a number one hit this day 54 years ago.
Oh, wow. Okay.
As mentioned, we are loaded here. And you, Mr. Overachiever, I mean, you got linked for all of these. I was just expecting you overperformed on the assignment. I just needed a couple. But now we're going to see how many of these we can get to. Which is actually good, because then you don't have to listen to me try to, you know, make wisecracks after every single one of them. Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture debuted in Moscow on this day in 1882. It's not the same without the fireworks, though, right?
It also takes 14 minutes to get to this point, Pat.
Yes, they weren't making 3-minute records for radio at that point. Okay, we mentioned Robert Plant's birthday. We played a little Led Zeppelin earlier. He is 76 today. Al Roker is 70. Amy Adams is 50 today. Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit is 54. This is the anniversary of the birth of the late great soul superstar Isaac Hayes, born this day in 1942. Another one where we could just shut it down after this and play this out for the next 6 minutes, right?
Yeah. We're going to go take a break right now, folks. Enjoy this smooth funk.
Yeah. We've got also the late Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy was born this day in 1949. Doug Feiger, lead singer for The Knack, passed away in 2010. He was born this day in 1952. Former Three Doors Down guitarist Matt Roberts was found dead of an apparent drug overdose in his hotel in West Bend, Wisconsin, on this day in 2016. The National Football League has a birthday today. It was organized on this day in Canton, Ohio in 1920. Another birthday here, Demi Lovato turns 32 today. Lou Gehrig hit a home run on this day in 1938. Not just any home run. It was a grand slam. Not just any grand slam. His 23rd career grand slam. It was a record that would stand for 75 years until it was broken by Alex Rodriguez. On this day in 1991, the Spin Doctors released their debut album, Pocketful of Kryptonite, and it would sell more than 5 million copies, thanks to two princes and the single. Now, as you mentioned, I mean, there's almost any given day where the Eagles could show up in the history lesson, and we're gonna mention this one because it was on this day in 2018, so we're going back 6 years now, that the Recording Industry Association certified that the Eagles' Greatest Hits album, the first one, 1971 to 1975, was now at 38 million sales, making it the best-selling album of all time, besting Michael Jackson's Thriller by about 5 million. And by the way, another Eagles album, Hotel California, is third on the list at 26 million. Hard to pick which of the many early Eagles singles to highlight from that Greatest Hits album, but Greg found one. One of these
nights. And the thing about the Greatest Hits 71 to 75, that is before Hotel California.
Yes.
So, like, yeah, you pick that one up, you're like, where's Hotel California? Where's all the... No, they hadn't released that album yet.
Here's your bit of trivia here. This was the first album I ever purchased with my own money.
Oh, that's cool, man.
I know. I was 12 years old. I had just started a paper route delivering the St. Paul Dispatch and the St. Paul Pioneer Press, and with my own money, at a grocery store, because kids back then, grocery stores sold everything, including records. There was a record section.
How much was it?
$9.99.
Oh wow, that's expensive.
It was there were some things where the per unit price has come down over time, but back then, you know, if you wanted a 45, that was 99 cents, and an album was like, could have been anywhere from $8 to $10, $7.99 to $9.99. Yeah. For an album. So you want, and of course you weren't making big bucks on the paper route, so it had to be something that you were going to listen to a lot.
Yeah.
And that one got listened to a lot.
Just taking it to school, like, oh, what's this, folks? This is the Eagles' Greatest Hits. I bought it with my own money paper album. I'm cool.
Yeah, that's
no
right.
No big deal.
Yep. So that's the biggest album of all time in the U.S. By the way, Michael Jackson's Thriller is still by far the biggest selling album worldwide. And on this day in 1977, the number one song was by The Emotions.
What an intro.
Little Miss Boo Thing. Pat,
come on.
Got my remakes mixed up over there.
It's like truly what, like, probably top 20 intro that everyone knows. Like,
oh, yes. Yep. And you're not going to turn it off. It's upbeat that way.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're having just the right thing for breakfast, what a nice coincidence for you. Today is National Bacon Lovers Day.
Oh.
I feel special.
Not too much, folks.
Can you have too much?
I'm sure Dr. Lyerly would say yes.
So would Dr. Kreitlow, and so would a lot of people.
Yeah, I think you have that answer right there.
A lot of people in cemeteries would go, yes, I would say that there is too much. So perhaps. But maybe some of you are more saying, oh, wait, you mean because I'm having chocolate pecan pie? Because today is chocolate pecan pie day. So if that's your breakfast, again, congratulations. You match up with the national day calendar.
There you go.
I don't know if I've ever had chocolate pecan pie. I'm not sure. I don't know what I would think of that.
I don't know if I ever have. I'm not an adventurous person when it comes to pie. I'll just take whatever you give me. So it's a chance that someone just said, here's chocolate pecan pie. And I was like, all right.
Today is World Mosquito Day. And it is a good thing to be aware of. We kind of take it for granted here in the States. I mean, mosquitoes are there, but they aren't nearly the problem that they could be otherwise. And again, having lived on an island where you watch the nightly flights, you know, to try to tamp down the mosquito population, you learn to appreciate those who are trying to, you know, do their part for public health as well as a major public nuisance.
Yeah.
And of course, it is National Radio Day. So congratulations to you, Greg Bach.
Congratulations to you, Pat Kreitlow. It's your day.
Oh, thank you. I feel like it's my day, too.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening to National Radio Day here on Civic Media.
And, of course, National Sandwich Month continues with, well, yeah, the bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich.
Okay, if you want it. All right. If I call it that, cool.
Yep. Thank you. That's right. And you still have a hot take on sandwiches you're going to give us before the month is over.
And you just referenced it, so...
Here we go. Back after this, you're up north.